American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day to you. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you for the Internet for Monday, February 7th, 2005. And that's a month that always looks like it's just spelt wrong, doesn't it? February, like if you look at the actual month itself, it just looks wrong. You know, February or whatever. I mean, that's just a badly designed word. Maybe we should rename all the months. I think that'd be, or of course, I guess we have, haven't we? Jan, Feb, Mar. That's kind of how it works now. No one ever actually writes out the whole word. Kind of sad, but there it is. But this is your Newsreel show for Monday. I'm your host, Sean Kennedy, and your source for independent media and news that will give you the edge against the core political tyranny that is trying to enslave you. If you don't believe that core political tyranny is trying to enslave you, you need to wake the fuck up. You can read along with me by going to my live journal, and you'll know it's time to turn the page when I call out, "Oh my God, it's really happening again." It's amazing how many things have changed and how many things have stayed the same since, you know, Nazi Germany and all the rest of it. I mean, a lot of people think I'm out of control by comparing the current state of affairs in North America to Nazi Germany. I mean, but when you look at it, the fascism of Nazi Germany and the fascism of all the regimes have a lot of things in common. And this is one of those shows that, thankfully, you know, I'm broadcasting from Canada right now, and I'm able to avoid the pain of being in the United States and being subjected to all these laws. And for those Americans that are in the United States and subjected to these laws, I'm truly sorry that your government has become this corrupt and that you are having your freedoms as restricted as they are. But there is hope, and there is hope as long as one of us, and that one of us may well be me, is able to broadcast to the world. So that's, you know, my little shtick. That's what we're doing here. And you may notice that Sim is not here. And the reason why Sim is not here is because we had to distort the time programming. By the time you actually hear this, I will be in the United States in New York City. So this is being pre-recorded a couple of days prior because we don't know what kind of things are going to be going on. Tomorrow's show, which would be Tuesday's show, should be have Sim and I on it from broadcasting from New York. But we wanted to give ourselves a bit of an edge, so I'm recording this particular show late on Saturday night. After we finish recording this, I have to continue packing, make sure everything's solid, be at the airport for 4:30 in the morning with Sim, and then we're going to take a 12-hour flight, hit the ground. We'll be doing a speaking engagement at the Adirondacks College. You can get all information from the Rant Media page. And from there, we'll be moving on to doing a Rant Meet on Tuesday, and we should be back by Thursday latest, I'm thinking. You know, which would be good. Quick in, quick out, you know. Extraction team shouldn't be needed, but if they are, don't you worry, we'll be letting you know. I had a chance to catch a film. On a personal note, I had a chance to catch a film that didn't suck, which was kind of amazing. I actually have the 6-issue Aliens miniseries, and for anyone out there who is into Aliens, and I mean the Aliens as in the Geiger Aliens, great series, good stuff, lots of really, you know, very advanced concepts and ideas going on in that series. And of course there was the Alien versus Predator, and I have one of the Predator comics from back in the day. So I never actually got a chance to watch Aliens versus Predator. And if you go in there, if you read all the Dark Horse comics and then you go see the movie, you're going to be horribly, horribly upset. Because, you know, the Dark Horse comics are amazing. They're stellar. They're really top-of-the-line stuff. And the movie was, you know, it's cotton candy. It's fluffy. You know what I mean? So Aliens versus Predator was cotton candy and fluffy. But you know what? I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It had some neat toys in it, and it was a lot of fun, and there were some good fights and stuff, and, you know, the alien sticking the spear in the side of the queen's head, I mean, that was magic stuff. I mean, I really enjoyed that. It's good fun. So if you're out to, you know, rent something, and you had a chance to check that out, I'm not saying it was Lord of the Rings here, I'm just saying it was a good time. So I figured I'd throw out a review whenever I catch a film like that. Actually, I caught another really good film called Spartan. I bought it, one of those, you know, when you go to the DVD store, and there's a DVD there, and it looks like something you'd like, and there's a lot of reviews, and you like all the actors, so you pick up the DVD. I don't know if you do that, but I occasionally do that just to be random, just to be a little vicious, just to be like a psycho. And I picked up a movie called Spartan, starring Val Kilmer, who, by the way, is a hardcore method actor, and that was kind of a neat film. Kind of a neat film. I'd recommend seeing it. I don't know about a purchase, but it's definitely worth a rental if you're into, you know, hardcore cloak and dagger espionage stuff, which I, of course, am to a certain degree. I mean, any cyberpunk, I think, would be. So, moving right into the feedback for today's show, I got feedback number one. Dear Sean, in a recent show, you used the recent Phoenix water scare as an example to decry over-declaration of addiction in our culture, coffee fixes in particular. Side note to get this out of the way, people are far too fixated on substances. It's fucking scary. Anyway, I've been in Phoenix for 5 years, and it seems every year we have some sort of citywide crisis that is only reported and never directly visible. Example, the recent water scare, we were told via every news outlet in the municipal water supply could contain dangerous organisms. Solution? Don't drink the water. Restaurant serves sodas from 2 liters, bottles, no ice. I drank the tap water anyway, but I've always taken steps to maintain a healthy immune system, so no worries for me. I have not fallen ill yet. Well, that's an interesting idea. In 2004, we had fuel shortages, which drove the price of fuel way up within a week. But just 50 miles outside of town, fuel was a full 60 cents per gallon cheaper. No clear indication why. August 2003, had major fuel supply rupture. And then another major fuel supply line rupture, causing gasoline to be profoundly difficult to obtain in Phoenix. Fuel trucks would randomly arrive at specific locations, be followed by a line of cars a mile long desperate for fuel. Half were turned away without fuel. Police began regulating gas stations. This didn't affect me because I've converted my truck to run on a variety of fuels. The point is, there were no photos of the supposed fuel line rupture. Biggest news story in the whole city, and there's no photos. I routinely drive the 4x4 trails near where the supposed fuel line rupture occurred and saw no evidence of any type of cleanup or repair activity during this period. 2002 had specific and continuous warnings about terrorist attack on our nearby nuke plant, which, by the way, is a non-breeder plant and therefore cannot go Chernobyl under any circumstances. Absolute maximum human life impact, worst case scenario, would be under 1,000. The majority of which would be employees. Joe Citizen in Phoenix would simply notice his lights are off. I was not useful during 2000 and much of 2001 during private issues, and I don't recall those years much. What's the point of this? I sometimes wonder if not just being told shit to see what our reaction is. There's never any proof of any of these scares have any actual substance. Phoenix might just be being a testbed for public reaction and herd behavior. I'm not putting the tinfoil hat on yet, but it's good to remember things and recognize patterns. Apanthropy. That's interesting, because Apanthropy is the kind of guy who actually would drive out there in his truck and check to see if there is a fuel line leak. And that's something we should all do. We should all check some of the news. I mean, whenever you're getting news from the sources, there's always an ulterior mean. Like, whenever you get a news story reported to you, is it news? Are you getting that story because it's news, or are they getting you that story because they're trying to entertain you? Are they giving you this news story because they think you can use this information, or is it because somebody wants you to have this information so that they can use this as posturing and positioning to get your opinion to swing a certain way? This is the importance of independent media, and one of the things that we'll be talking about in the United States, the message of independent media. I think the overriding message of independent media is think for yourself, which is something that, of course, any of the core politicals would not want anything to do with whatsoever. Another piece of feedback here. Hi, Sean. Just want to drop you a line to express my gratitude for all the effort you've put into the Newsreel show. I've always considered myself to be outside the mainstream looking in, but I haven't always found the most productive ways to express that and do something constructive to help take back society from the psycho-Christian core political junta. Or junta? Junta. Your show helps steer me in the right direction to keep myself focused on the real problems going on in the world and not what CNN Fox News tells me the problems are. I don't agree with all of your points of view, but I respect the opinions you have. Just hearing what you have to say every week gets my mind working and in the right direction to renew my motivations to be more socially aware. I hope you can keep this up for a very long time, and as soon as I get my finances sorted, you will be definitely have a donation from me. Thank you very much for the service you are providing. Shadowkill. And as a side note, you know, every few episodes I decry about how people have donated to me, and I'm really overwhelmed by that. Anyone who does donate, thank you so much. But thank you seems like such a feeble way of saying that, but there's no real way that I can, like, show my affection to you other than working as hard as I can to make sure that I deliver product to you. And yeah, there's cost. You bet. It is hard. I mean, doing the show. The show's three and a half hours a day. It seems that my I work a full-time job and I have a part-time job, and it looks like my full-time job may be objecting to some of the things that I'm doing and how I talk to people at my place of work, where I'm, you know, encouraging people to think for themselves and stuff like that. And because of the fact that, and anyone out there who's ever fought or had to stand up for something, anyone who's ever had to really, you know, choke out, you know, the machine there, anyone who's had to fight, will tell you that there are times when you really got to put it on the line. If you just buckle under the first time somebody says, you know what, we could fire you for this. If you buckle under the first time they say that, then they got you. You're not really, you know, fighting for anything. Sometimes you have to stand up. Sometimes as a man or as a woman or as a person, you have to stand for what you believe in. And that's what I intend to do, come what may. Now, on to, and thank you very much, Shadowkill, for that. That means a lot to me, dude. On to sort yourself out. Dear Sean, here's a good one. For the past few years, I've been struggling hard with insomnia. Ooh, often as I relax in bed, my mind will wander. It will venture into some darker parts of my mind. Yeah, that's bad. They come for you at night. Yeah, it always does happen like that. All the doubts, all the screaming, it's a bad scene. I'll face things like my fears, and the anxiety will get me so excited that I can't sleep. Yeah, that's, ooh, God, that's horrible. Normally, to combat the situation, I have a bit of alcohol to drink, or just stay up online until I can take no more and just crash. Sleeping pills don't work because when they knock me out, I don't sleep well. I can easily be up till 3 a.m. each night, and because of a new job, I've gotten myself to be in bed by midnight. Sadly, this is still only getting me about 5 to 6 hours sleep on a typical night, and it's really affecting my get-up-and-go. The only time I seem to be able to fall asleep at the drop of a hat is when my girlfriend stays the night on weekends, and I can hold her next to me. But I need to find a solution for the rest of the week so I can properly function during the day. Any suggestions or recommendations would be appreciated. Name withheld, because, well, that's some pretty personal stuff. Now, yes, I can help you here. The number one thing you've got to do is you've got to exercise when you first wake up in the morning. If you're getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you're going to look at me like, what? If you're getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, or let's say you've got to be, you're saying you're going to bed at midnight, you're getting up at 6. Okay, you need to get up at 5 or 5:30 and go for a run every morning. Like, just do 3 clicks or something like that. If you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, well, you know, you can walk. Don't feed me that. But you want to get yourself so you're doing, like, you know, just maybe a mile. Just, you know, a 10-minute run first thing in the morning. This will ramp up your metabolism. It will be very, very good for you. Don't eat before you do it. It increases metabolism, burns fat, things like that. Now, a little bit of exercise will go a long way. In the evenings, okay, you want to have a shutdown time. Okay, so let's say if you're getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you definitely want to be in bed by 10, which means that you want to start getting ready for bed around 9. 9 o'clock, you do some Qi Gong, C-H-I, or actually it's originally called Qi Gong, which is Q-I-G-O-N-G, or it's more westernized called Qi Gong, C-H-I-K-U-N-G. These are breathing exercises developed in the Far East, and some say was derived from yoga. Very, very helpful. I find it helps me, and it slows the mind down. Do a little bit of meditation, maybe read for a little bit if that's something that quiets your mind, allows you to relax, bring yourself down, have a shower, and have like a ritual you do. You know what I mean? Like, you do your Qi Gong, stretch, have a shower, start getting ready for bed, listen to slow music, and then go to bed. If that is not working, I would recommend, depending on your age now, you seem probably young, so you might be a little young to start using melatonin. But without melatonin is a hormone released in the brain. They've linked it to life extension technology. So that would be something that, if nothing works, that would be something I would start trying to play around with. You can get it without prescription in the United States. Or what would be a better idea is to get some, go to your local herbalist and pick up some valerian root. And valerian root will put you on your ass and allow you to sleep a lot better without all the messy side effects of chemical drugs. It is a natural herb, and again, available at most health food stores for now. But exercise is the number one thing you can do. Further to that, the reason you want to ask yourself, why is it that I am able to sleep at night with my girlfriend there? Why is that? Why does that occur? Other than the fact that, of course, you know, it's nice, she's pretty, blah, 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 and you want to have her with you. There's a reason why that is because you're laden with fear, and having her there makes a lot of the demons go away. And women are beautiful that way. You know, and I had a really good friend of mine one time named Traveras, who told me a story about chicks, which I'll relay to you, is that, and he was a Portuguese guy, but he would say that women, you know, they, men as they are born, and this is going to maybe sound like a lot of hokey shit to the chicks that are listening, but hear me out. You see, men in the world, right, we have the jungle that is the world around us, and if we're single, When we're in this world, we have venom, and the venom is our angst, our anger, our ability to fight, so on and so forth. This is the thing we hold on to give us strength in day-to-day life, and that is our venom. And when we have a girlfriend and we spend our lives with women, women take that venom from men. They remove it so that, because if they don't remove it, it winds up poisoning us and killing us. And that's why you see these guys who've been single their whole lives, and they're bitter, angry, vengeful, pissed off men by the age of like 50, 60 years old. And that's not so good. So that you have to have the venom taken from you. But if the women take too much venom, then you are left defenseless against the jungle. And I find that to be, you know, some people say that's a sexist statement. What kind of bullshit is that? I don't think it is bullshit. I think there's probably some truth to that. And I think that that's one of the reasons why that, you know, you should always try to hold on to the person that you love and keep them as a, well, think of yourself as a team. Don't, I've always thought of, you know, being with your partner as not being tied up or whatever. I think it's more being teamed up rather than tied down. So it's important that, you know, the only two things you can really focus on in your life is what you do with your time, meaning your work, and having a good lover. If you have a good lover and a good partner, then hopefully it's the same person, you know. You'll be doing all right. If not, then, you know, you have your work. But really, those are the only two things you got in life. Is as a guy, you know, you can either have a good woman, and if you can get a... do what you enjoy. Those, if you can get those two things, I don't care what kind of car you drive. If you got those two items, man, you got the game beat. So, on to the news. How about this for something to put in your pipe and smoke? Colorado teens fined for giving cookies to the neighbors. Now, you've heard about this. You've heard about this. I had this sent to me like by a billion different people. This is some sick shit. I can't believe this actually happened. You know, and this is a prime example of a legal system just gone completely awry. You know, a Colorado judge ordered two teenage girls to pay about $900 for the distress a neighbor said they caused by giving her homemade cookies adorned with paper hearts. The pair were ordered to pay $871.70 plus $39 in court costs after the neighbor Juanita Renea Young, 49, filed a lawsuit complaining that unsolicited cookies left at her house after the girls knocked on her door had triggered an anxiety attack and sent her to the hospital the next day. Taylor Ostergaard, then 17, and Lindsay Jo Zealot, 18, paid the judgment on Thursday after small claims court ruling by La Plata County Court Judge Doug Walker, a court clerk said on Friday. The girls baked cookies as a surprise for several of their rural Colorado neighbors in July 31 and dropped off small batches on their porches, accompanied by red or pink paper hearts saying, "Have a great night." Wow. In the Denver Post newspaper reported on Friday, the girls had decided to stay home and bake cookies rather than go dance, where there might be cursing and drinking. It reported that six neighbors wrote letters, entered as evidence into the case, thanking the girls for the cookies. Okay, so what we got here is a couple of, you know, pretty straight-laced, kind of conservative chicks who decide, rather than going out on a Friday night, they're going to stay home and get all wiggy by baking cookies. Which, you know what? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's your thing, rock on, Chief. You know, I'd want to, you know, I'd probably put something in the cookies to make sure me and my whole neighborhood would have one hell of a block party. But that's just, you know, me. And the fact that this woman, okay, obviously this broad here, what's her name? Juanita Young there, 49, is obviously batshit insane. Okay, this woman's obviously got huge issues. If you find cookies and this triggers a psychological attack where you have to go to the hospital the next day, I don't think you should check out of the hospital. What these girls did, regardless of their motivation, maybe they go to church and it was also a big church thing and they're just trying to, you know, get themselves into heaven or whatever their motivation was. I mean, that was a beautiful thing to do. I mean, anybody would walk around and hand it out. If I had somebody bake me cookies, I wouldn't know what to say. I'd be like, thanks. You know, because I'm never really good with gifts anyway. I hate that shit. It's just like, you know, and the fans do that stuff all the time too. Like, when they give you a book, like face-to-face and stuff like that. Like, I got Black Easter from Soul Trance. Ooh, I hope it was Soul Trance now, because if it's not, I'm really going to get shot. Yeah, I'm really certain it was Soul Trance, actually, who gave me that. And great book, fantastic book. Loved it. You know, it's a first printing. It's very hard to find. And the guy just gives it to me, you know, and I'm like, thank you. I don't know what else to say, you know. And you know, with all the unbelievable praise I get from the show, it's sometimes it's really overwhelming. But to do something like that and have someone sue them in court for giving out cookies, I mean, what's this judge thinking? The judge should have thrown this out and said, "This is retarded. Gone. Thanks for coming out." Now, on to this next story, which is just another example of the total destruction of common sense in North America. Snowy hillsides from New Jersey communities have become only cruel temptations because several counties have banned sledding in parks, citing liability concerns. Parents in Pittsburgh near Pennsylvania border recently petitioned city officials to repeal the ordinance, but failed. It's illegal to sled. But every child, you know, no more rosebud for you. If someone is getting hurt, they will sue the town, said Joel Cobert, town attorney. We can't cover the liability insurance. The kind of cost is prohibitive. That's something, you know, there's a word that I just can't stand, prohibitive. That's a bullshit word, man. Everything will kill you. Everything will kill you. The sun will kill you. The beer will kill you. The meat will kill you. Don't drink the water. You know, I say all this stuff so that you're well aware. But I want you to temper this with your own goddamn judgment. You know, personally, if I had a kid, fuck what the city says, I'm going to take my kid down to the park and we're going to go sledding. If the bylaw officer shows up, tell him to go fuck himself. You know, well, he'll give you a ticket and it goes from there. Yeah, okay, if you're just one guy on the hill doing that, but what if everybody did it? What if everybody just said, no, we're sledding? You know, well, you can't sled here anymore. Look, Grinch, you stole Christmas. Why don't you take a hike? This is just insane. Over the years, other Jersey counties, including Gloucester, Camden, and Warren, have made public property off-limits to sleds, but many parents and kids in Pittsburgh were unaware of the ban until this year when they saw the new signs warning that disobeying the law could result in a fine. Well, that's easy enough. Take down the signs. Because if you take down the signs, that means that the other people who don't know about it, they can't find them because there's no signage. Without signage, there's no indication. So they should be taking those signs down. Cobert said he urged officials to post sign and better enforce the sledding rule after the insurance company paid out thousands of dollars in sledding-related accidents. Okay, if you ride a sled down, well, how about sledding at your own risk? How about that? There's no, like, sled lifeguard on the go. So if you're going to ride your sleigh, you're going to take, you know, you roll the dice, you take your chances. You know, this is a good time for children to learn that it's, you know, for a little bit of self-reliance. If you steer your sled into a tree, you're an idiot. Natural selection in action. Now, here's a story from over across the pond that kind of got my attention. How about a citywide supercomputer? Today, the incubation of the world's first virtual city supercomputers was announced with the Almer Grid project kickoff in the city of Almer in the Netherlands. This event took place on the last day in the week of intense grid activity and announcements in Europe that started with the European Grid Technology Day in Brussels and was followed by the Global Grid Forum 12 conference in the same city. Now, that's kind of a... The European Grid. Wow, there's a cyberpunk tour. I'm over on the European Grid. In Almere, one is working on implementing the first heterogeneous city computer grid in the world. In a first stage, this grid will be used for scientific research. Then it has already been selected for medical research project. The Almere Grid, however, aims to perform specific research on a heterogeneous grid can interconnect using non-central computer resources from individual participants and companies. Currently, the organizer and initiating contacts with all relevant grid technology companies. During the plenary kickoff meeting in the Almer Business Center, plans are being deployed. Now, this is kind of an interesting thing, but you can bet that this is going to be a test bed, which is going to be made a lot more, you know, apparent in the United States. If they start putting, hooking up the whole city to a computer? I mean, this is a concept which I'm really not that aware of. I don't know much about this. As a matter of fact, the whole thing is a little bit above me, you know. But I'm sure if I could, you know, read the article and do a little bit more research, you could figure it out. But once we figure that out, once we see what this grid is capable of, we can definitely, you know, put on our evil supervillain caps and figure out what the government would do with something like this. How could this be used against us? Because you got to bear in mind that nobody's actually out for the public's best interest except for the public, except for maybe Noam Chomsky. See, that's just it. It's all about leverage. This political thing's about truth and justice. No government gives a shit about any of that. They want leverage. They want control. That's what they want. So if they're putting in grids like this, you want to ask why. Why are they doing this? Oh, it's for medical research. Who's standing to make money? Because you know this is costing money. These are things you want to watch. And here we go. This is the first piece of really good black ice I've had sent to me. Now, this is fantastic. If you use an illegal copy, this software will wipe your device clean. Check this out. Software piracy is bad. No one disputes the fact. I dispute the fact. And I know software developers lose sleep over pirated copies of their programs flying around the internet over P2P networks. Do they really? From time to time, a developer gets fed up and puts malicious code in a publicly distributed program so that something bad happens to anyone who uses a legal copy of the software. I've never heard of that, but that's okay. This has recently happened again, and the interesting discussions are flaring up with supporters on both sides of the argument, making the position in the sand and firing away at the other side. Antov Tomov distributes a number of capable programs on the Windows mobile platform, including Pocket Hackmaster and Pocket Mechanic. The program that's causing all the shouting matches in this case is Pocket Mechanic. It appears that Mr. Tomov recently distributed an update to Pocket Mechanic program that includes some malicious anti-piracy code. Of course, whether or not it's malicious depends on which side you're firing of the firing line you fall on. The program apparently detects if the executed program is a legally licensed one, and if not, erases your entire Windows mobile device by hard resetting it. It has reportedly wiped out removable storage cards, too. I have contacted Mr. Tomov about the situation, but have not gotten a response as of the time of this article. Now, this is interesting, because you can see that once this starts to happen, how long before, you know, Microsoft puts an update out that just shuts down computers? Just bang, kills it, dead, wipes everything, you know, right, maybe even fries the BIOS. You know, is that possible? You bet it is. Oh, you bet it is. They could do it. You know, do they? No, because they know that the legal ramifications would be huge. But if we start seeing, this is where the truly evil black ice is going to come from. It's not going to come from the core politicals. They'll adopt it, but only after pricks like this Mr. Tomov dude, who are just angry that they're not making enough money. Try it from my position, pal. Why don't you just put the stuff out there? If people like it, they will support you. If they don't like it, they won't support you. Stop sticking a gun in people's mouths. If you write good software, have a bit of faith. It's true that people are shit, but we are dealing with Server and the online community, and it is a community of people who choose to be a member of Server. No one's forced to do this. There's a very good, very, very good opportunity for people out there who write software and who live on donation. So don't get all vicious about this, because you're going to watch, by trying to, you know, make your sales concrete, you're going to turn yourself into a giant dick, screw your rep, and you're never going to sell shit. Just a thought, man. Just a thought. I'm sure you're not actually a prick, but you just made a bad call with this code thing, man. Now, on for the Uber hacksaw. Never mind the laughing, man. I think Smitten Kitten is the shit. Hear this story out. The recording industry sued Gertrude Walton, accused her of illegally tracing music over the internet as her call sign, Smitten Kitten. But the lawsuit was filed more than a month after the 83-year-old woman died in December, and her daughter says Walton hated computers anyway. A group of record companies named Walton as the sole defendant in a federal lawsuit claiming she'd made over 700 songs available for free to the internet. Walton's daughter, Robin Chinuba, lived with her mother for the last 17 years and said her mother objected to having a computer in the house. My mother wouldn't know how to turn on a computer, Chinuba said. She said she faxed a copy of her mother's death certificate to record company officials several days before the lawsuit was filed in response to a letter from the company regarding the upcoming legal filing. I'm pretty sure she's not going to leave Greenwood Memorial Park, where she's buried, to attend the hearing, Chinuba said. I don't think she's dead. She's not dead. Smitten Kitten's the shit, man. She's obviously so leet. She's so leet, she's got everybody thinking that she's this 83-year-old dead woman. Now that is a hack and a half. Not only that, she's got a broad in there saying that, oh yeah, I'm her daughter. No. Smitten Kitten is out there, man. She's on the web right now. I could almost channel her spirit. I could feel it through the internet at this very moment. Smitten Kitten is Uber Hacksaw. Now, how about we just cut the shit? No taxes for the rich. That's what they want. They want no taxes for the rich. So that only poor people pay taxes to keep us all in that nice feudal serf kind of role, because that's what's happening. I mean, let's cut the crap. A new aristocracy is taking over not just the United States of America, but also the world. Proof of how far along it has come was written an article by Glenn R. Simpson in January 28, 2005 edition of the Wall Street Journal. European countries have been steadily slashing corporate taxes, tax rates. Now, why would they do that? Corporations are making gobs of money. They're the ones with the money. Shouldn't be cutting their rates, wrote Simpson, adding between 2000 and 2003, one nation after another has moved towards lower corporate rates with fewer loopholes. On January 31, 2005, the Journal followed up with another story, Tax Showdown, promised by the EU chief, pointing out that the new president of the European Commission launched a blunt attack on the French and German efforts to end tax competition among European Union countries. Ironically, EU leader José Manuel Barroso is also quoted in the Journal saying, corporatist vested interests is the most important problem before, be they from the right or from the left. Now, that's an interesting idea, because corporatist vested interests are the most important problem, be they from the left or from the right. So what this guy's saying is that the core political is actually the largest problem facing what they're dealing with right now. I mean, realistically, these corporations are going to become the new gods. They already are. I mean, Starbucks is a religion to the people who work there. Do you know any managers from Starbucks? It's their lives. It's their whole fucking life. You go to somebody and say, you know what, there's more to life than work. They'll look at you like there's a toaster on your head. They'll look at you like you're an extremist. Remember when there was no cell phones and no one would take a call at home? Well, those days are gone, buddy. They're history. Now, if you want to make it inside the company, you've got to be willing to do what others are unwilling to do. It's always been that way with companies. But now, what are these people unwilling to do? It'll only be a matter of time before, I'm sure it's already happening now, where people, you know, sleep with their supervisors and stuff like that to you know, move them further along. But that used to be, like, you know, backroom kind of stuff that no one would talk about. Now, well, you know, if you're willing to do what others are unwilling to do, you will be successful. Can't argue with that. So when you have people who are dedicating their lives to a job because that's all they have, and you wind up with this, you know, midlife crisis scenario where people just work harder to get past midlife crisis because they have no idea who they are. Their dreams are gone. Their sense of self is completely toast because they have no imagination. Stronger the sense of self, the stronger the imagination, and vice versa. So, naturally, we want to keep all the imaginative, creative people out of the loop. We want to medicate them into non-existence and just keep everyone as nice, hardcore, dedicated, socio-religious, fanatical workers, because that's what they want. It makes me sick to think of all the people who've never really, honest to God, even have a dream to travel. They never have a dream to watch the sunset in the desert. They never have a dream to swim with the dolphins. They don't even give a fuck. All they care about is making sure that, you know, they can make the next quarter. And there are people out there like that. I'm not making this up. Because when you meet them and you see them and they're totally dead inside and all they have is this, you know, bottom line number scheme, it's sick. It makes you want to, like, help them somehow or feed them, you know, like, I don't know, 500 mics of acid or something. You want to get these guys to, like, crank open their heads and say, dude, this is not what life is about. Life is not about this. The internet, don't ever shit yourself. The internet computers are a tool. They are only a tool. They are a fantastic tool. But we need to go outside. We need to experience life. We can't just, you know, all hide in our shells and wait for it to blow over. You do have to get out there and you do have to get involved. I'm a big believer in the internet, but that's why I'm going off about a large convertible car. I don't just go out and sit in it. You drive the goddamn thing. Get it out in the world, man. Got to see what's going on. Now, moving further into the cyberpunk realm, if anyone has ever watched Max Headroom, which, for all you children out there, you probably have no idea who Max Headroom is. Max Headroom was a television series that came out years ahead of its time, Network 23, 20 minutes into the future. And what they did was they had this guy who was a reporter. He gets a brain injury, so they make an AI program that's this, you know, funny, zany head and shoulders that's all done with, chopping the video footage and putting some cheesy graphics in behind him, and he becomes Max Headroom. And back in the day, he hit the ground like a bomb, man. The guy was huge. Everybody think was Max Headroom. Then Coca-Cola bought the rights to Max Headroom. And I remember watching the ads. Everybody used to love him. It was great. And, of course, they just shelved Max Headroom, and Max Headroom went the way of the dodo. But there was a television series before Coca-Cola bought him, I guess, where they did this, like, 18-episode series. One of the things in the episodes was a thing called the Body Bank. And the Body Bank was a place where people would go to turn in bodies that were freshly dead for money. Well, seems that that's happening now. Shaken by scandals involving black market sale of body parts. Where is this? The University of California officials are considering inserting supermarket-style barcodes or radio frequency devices into cadavers to keep track of them. How cool is that? Let's get the cadavers and start tattooing barcodes on them. I want a photo of that. The high-tech fix is one of a number of reforms UC is proposing to reassure people that bodies donated to science will be used as intended and treated with respect. I personally can't imagine a less respectful thing than dropping a barcode on my corpse. We want these to be programs that really do work so we can maintain a public trust and know that we're going to do everything possible to maintain and respect the great donation of these gifts that these gifts represent. Michael Drake, UC Vice President of Health Affairs. Yeah, okay, whatever, dude. Those bodies just, they're dollars and cents to you, so don't cut the shit. I love it when these guys try to blow smoke up. It's such a magnificent gift. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is a good gift. And it's cool that people do it. But don't snow me, dude. Every year, thousands of bodies are donated to U.S. tissue banks and medical schools. Skin, bone, and other tissues are often used in transplants. Great. New medical treatments and safety equipment, such as bicycle helmets, are tested on various body parts. Grim. And cadavers are used to teach medical students surgical skills and anatomy. Ah, man. That's just creepy. I could never do the doctor thing. You know, I wanted to be a doctor once. And wouldn't that just be scary, eh? Hey, how's it going? I'm your doctor. But seriously, I wouldn't mind doing that. I got the memory work for it. I got a good mind for that kind of shit. The only problem is, just, you know, I can't handle seeing people in pain. I've got too much empathy going on. You know, like, that's why I've got to do the news show. Whenever I think about not doing it, all I have to do is look at the news stories that get sent to me by all the netrunners, and I'm like, no, man, I got to do something. You know, and, you know, don't pick up a gun, pick up a mic. But there is also a lucrative underground trade in corpses and body parts, despite federal laws against the sale of organs and tissues. There's more regulation that cover shipment of oranges coming to California than there is shipment of human knees that are going from body parts broker in one state to Las Vegas. Oh, my God. Said Dr. Todd Olson, director of anatomical donations at Albert Einstein Medical School of New York. So the body banks are already happy. And you know what? Money does make the rules. If you've got the cash, it's not going to be a problem. And, of course, something that's not being reported on whatsoever is the multinational core political invasion of countries. Namely mine. Namely my province. As a matter of fact, where I am right now. British Columbians, that would be me, are fighting to halt the outsourcing contract recently signed by their government that could place millions of the healthcare records in the hands of a private American company. Good move, guys. Activists in the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association are concerned that the data could be susceptible to seizure by American law enforcement agencies if the data resides with a company whose parent firm is in the U.S. The fear of the information could be used for data mining exercises, such as those previously involved passenger records from JetBlue and other airlines, being passed along to government agency, or the data could be passed to Border Patrol officials who could use the information to prevent British Columbians with serious health issues like AIDS from entering the United States. Which, I suppose, if you're in the United States, it only makes sense. Hey, we don't want no diseased Canadians down here. But, you know, that's a little fascist, and, you know, I can see your point that you wouldn't want diseased people crossing your borders, but they're people. Under the U.S. Patriot Act, authorities can force U.S. companies to relinquish information while preventing companies from telling customers or employees that it's being seized. Oh, that's nice. And activists fear that that reach will extend the subsidiaries of U.S. companies located outside the United States. So if you are like Home Depot, for example, it's a very serious concern, said Mark Rotenberg, executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. The level of protection in the U.S. is inadequate for non-U.S. persons. And it's understandable that foreign governments would be concerned on behalf of their own citizens about what might occur. Yeah? Let's put this another light. Let's put another spin on this, eh? How would you guys feel, how would you guys in America feel if all your medical records were all being outsourced? Because, you know, they're doing the outsourcing thing, their jobs are. And all this winds up going to the Sudan or Iran or Iraq. What if all of it goes down to some company based in Africa, and suddenly this company in Africa has access to every single piece of medical data? Your name, your phone number, everything. You could be subject to blackmail schemes. There's all kinds of crap. Oh, yeah, you know, you get picked up. You think that wouldn't be an access? This is how powerful information is. Let's say I get your data, okay? You're on tour somewhere, or you're traveling, you're being a tourist, and I know you're being a tourist because I've got your copy or flight itinerary, which I get from, you know, the Matrix or whatever. You go down to this country. Your daughter's back home. All you have to do is be picked up inside this country and say, we have your daughter. They lay a bunch of information down. You have a guy who can act, do some social engineering. You believe they got your daughter. They scam you for money. You're done. You're done. You'll do whatever they want because they think they've got your family. That's just off the top of my head. That's without even time for planning. You know, and I'm not even good at this shit. There's guys who take vitamins to do this stuff, okay? So, you know, you gotta, like, this is a really bad idea. Now, there is, I don't know how I feel about judges in the United States. It's kind of hit or miss with these guys, but this could be a good law, could be a bad law. It seems that a landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision last month giving judges more leeway in deciding federal prison terms could be good news for computer intruders who don't fit the classic criminal mold. Now, what the hell does that mean, the classic criminal? Legal experts say. The U.S. versus Booker decided 12 January. The court ruled 5-4 to overturn part of the 1984 law that required judges to sentence offenders to strictly buy a book of written guidelines produced by periodically revised by 7-member presidentially appointed commission. So whatever, this is the law penalty thing, you know. You do this, you get this, that's what the book says. Originally intended to eliminate unfair disparity in sentencing, the guidelines are built on an elaborate point system that sets baseline value for each category of crime and then adds or subtracts points for specific aggravated or mitigating circumstances. The more points, the higher the minimum and the maximum sentence available to the judge. In computer crimes, the most significant guideline by factor by far was the amount of financial loss the offender caused. Now, this is something that has to be proven because understand that if, let's say, I turn off a bunch of computers that run, say, a trading company, they could say that I'm responsible for the loss of billions of dollars. So that means they send me to jail forever. You know what I mean? But they didn't cause the loss of this money. All I did was turn off computers. You know, that's not the loss. Okay, I didn't take that money. The money was never made. Okay, so it's turns into some really good mumbo-jumbo. A calculus that led to a decade of fierce courtroom battles over what constitutes loss in the different computer intrusion scenarios. In the most famous example, the 1999 federal prosecutors claimed that hacker Kevin Mitnick inflicted $291 million in losses to his corporate victims, based primarily on the company's own assessment of the value of proprietary source code that Mitnick copied but did not damage. So he just took some information, and apparently the act of him taking that did $291 million in damage. You lying bunch of corporatelytical fucks. What a sick bunch of bastards. I can't handle that, man. It's like, does anyone else not see how much bullshit is involved here? To have these people assess their own damage loss, doesn't anyone see that as a conflict of interest? Like, come on, guys. And, of course, I'm not a big fan of medication, as everyone knows. I'm not a huge medication guy. I don't like the fact that everyone's over-medicating. But now, of course, we've got the core political junky children. Because everyone's so medicated, the children are born addicted to antidepressants. Newborn babies could be at risk of suffering withdrawal symptoms if their mothers are prescribed antidepressants during pregnancy, researchers said on Friday. Okay, that's junky talk. All right? The drugs known as selective reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, can cause convulsions, irritability, abnormal crying, and tremors in babies. Risks of neonatal convulsions and neonatal withdrawal syndrome seem to be increased with all SSRIs, said Professor Emilio Sanz at the University of La Laguna in Tenerife, Spain. Now, this is coming from Spain. Because you never have, you know, an American hospital saying this, because they're all in the back pockets of who? Pfizer. Thanks. If a pregnant woman is depressed and needs treatment, she should be treated, Sanz says at the interview. And he added that the lowest dose should be used. No, women have been depressed during pregnancy for a long time. Give them ice cream or something. Do not medicate them, because that will pass on to the baby. Hello? The majority of report cases uncovered by Sanz and his colleagues were associated with paroxetine, which is produced by the drug giants GlaxoSmithKline under the brand name of Paxil or Serozat, S-E-R-O-X-A-T. I don't think I call them like Frank and Bob. Paroxetine should not be used in pregnancy, or if used, should be given at the lowest effective dose, said Sanz, a specialist in clinical pharmacology. So, boys and girls, if you happen to be pregnant, you want to stay away from Paxil because it makes your kids fucking kind of goofy looking, all right? Stay away from the drugs. Matter of fact, if you're pregnant, I don't think you should be doing drugs at all. I think you should be, if ever there was a time that you want to wig out, get on a health kick, and eat only the healthiest organic foods, it would be when you are pregnant. GlaxoSmithKline said it would review the findings of the study. Yeah, we'll look at that. However, to date, we have not seen any causal link between medication and the symptoms. A spokesman for the company said, fuck off, clown. Again, this is conflict of interest. Yeah, we're the drug company. We don't think there's a problem because we're making a shitload of money. And if it does prove to be a problem, and we could get sued. So fuck that. We're not going to say shit. You scumbags. The scientists also suggested that doctors should monitor the use of SSRIs, particularly citalopram made by BioVail Corp, and like a whole bunch of crazy names here, with venlafaxine sold as Effexor. So that's another drug to, you know, just don't take drugs when you're pregnant. The findings were reported in the Lancet Medical Journal, another blow for SSRIs, which become the gold standard treatment for depression. Good. So, you know, the number one top-selling treatment for depression is being attacked because of pregnancy. You're not going to hear about this unless you happen to be in Spain, adhere to that journal, or listen to Newsreel, where yours truly gives you this kind of information. That's what it's about, man. You got to look at this and go, holy crap, what the hell is going on? It follows that the warnings from the European medical agencies that SSRIs may increase the risk of suicide in young people. British health authorities have urged doctors to use drugs sparingly and consider other methods of intervention such as counseling to treat depression. What a thought. What a concept that we should actually talk to our kids. Now on to your daily hack. Now this is kind of a good one. A lot of people be like, hey, Sean, I thought you said that pop was bad. Yes, pop is bad, but we want to make sure that, you know, Coca-Cola, because, you know, they're declaring war on countries in India and killing people and all that kind of stuff. Any chance I have to, you know, mess with Coca-Cola, I will. So today's daily hack tells you how to crack the Coke machine. Yes, from the website, if you follow my link from, you know, messing with Coke machines, you have Coke vending machines are everywhere. They're getting more and more like regular computers with LEDs that show ice-cold messages and whatnot. Well, there's a lot more in those little built-in computers than you may think, including the low-level operating system these babies run on is actually a debug menu that gives you access to all sorts of machine information and possibly gives you free Cokes in older machines and can allow other people not to buy these horrible drinks and therefore taking money from the corporations. Which machines work? There are a very strict list of vending machines that have debug menu. First off, they're all Coca-Cola product vending machines. This means the giant, unmiserable picture on the front must show any of the following. Coke, Dasani water, Barks root beer, vanilla Coke, cherry Coke, Sprite, Evian, blah, 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 blah. The machine must have an LED screen. Some of the older ones just allow LEDs to be set a price or amount and won't have the debug menu. You're safe if the little LED is telling you something. Usually it will scroll a message like, ice cold. Newer machines are more likely candidates. So make sure you go to my live journal, click on that, so you too can go and turn off the Coke machines, which is handy because then, you know, don't drink the Coke, for God's sakes, because that stuff's liquid death. That's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive, and chances are, Sim will be with me. This is a free broadcast. You can distribute it, do whatever you like with it. You can give it to people. You can do whatever, and I encourage you to do so. And this broadcast was made possible by the extremely generous and active donations of Jesse, Anonymous, Jesse again, Gray Ghost, Robert, Forleet, Michael, Matthew, Matt, Kevin, Derek, Jesse, Desert Runner, Eric, Speaker, Jeff, Malcolm, Peter, Keith, Timor, Weblife, Richard, Greg, Evan, Matt, Drake, Levi, Ashton, David, Brian, Austin, Tara, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Adam, Mystic, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Art, Darmude, Peter, Jesse, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Dylan, Lars, Daniel, Anonymous, and Philip. Thank you so much for your donations. You have no idea what they mean to me, and I pledge my allegiance to you. If you would like to keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. Special thanks to my netrunners who bring me my data. We got Transix Speaker, Bucky Fuller, Gray Ghost, Sylvanus, PolySci, Ricky Rocket, Mookie, BlitzCon, Fortress Wog, Stone Rido, Malkizdek, Astrofix, Valakai, and Neuros, who's also responsible for our daily hack. Thanks, Neuros. Digital baptisms today. Niven is now LED scorched, which is L capital LED scorched. So LED scorched. And for everyone else who's assisted in gathering me data, sending me links and everything, Hammer, everyone out there, Lovering, all you guys, thanks so much, guys. And if you have access to information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up more good stuff from Hallucinogen, because, I mean, as a band, these guys are just amazing. So until tomorrow, when I'm in New York, that's what Server said. End of line.
Human history represents such a radical break with the natural systems of biological organization that preceded it, that it must be the response to a kind of attractor or dwell point that lies ahead in the temporal dimension. Persistently, Western religions have integrated into their theologies the notion of a kind of end of the world. And I think that a lot of psychedelic experimentation sort of confirms this intuition. I mean, it isn't going to happen according to any of the scenarios of Orthodox religion, but the basic intuition that the universe seeks closure in a kind of omega point of transcendence is confirmed. It's almost as though this object in hyperspace, glittering in hyperspace, throws off reflections of itself, which actually ricochet into the past, illuminating this mystic inspiring that saint or visionary, and that out of these fragmentary glimpses of eternity, we can build a kind of map of not only the past of the universe and the evolutionary progression into novelty, but a kind of map of the future. This is what shamanism has always been about. A shaman is someone who has been to the end. It's someone who knows how the world really works. And knowing how the world really works means to have risen outside, above, beyond the dimensions of ordinary space-time and casuistry, and actually seen the wiring under the board, stepped outside the confines of learned culture and learned and embedded language into the domain of what Wittgenstein called the unspeakable, the transcendental presence of the other, which can be perceptioned in various ways to yield systems of knowledge which can be brought back into ordinary social space for the good of the community. So in the context of 90% of human culture, the shaman has been the agent of evolution, because the shaman learns the techniques to go between ordinary reality and the domain of the ideas, this higher dimensional continuum that is somehow parallel to us, available to us, and yet ordinarily occluded by cultural convention out of fear of the mystery, I believe. And what shamans are people who have been able to decondition themselves from the community's instinctual distrust of the mystery and to go into it, to go into this bewildering higher dimension and gain knowledge, recover the jewel lost at the beginning of time, save souls, cure, commune with the ancestors, so forth and so on. A shamanism is not a religion, it's a set of techniques. And the principal technique is the use of psychedelic plants. What psychedelics do is they dissolve boundaries. And in the presence of dissolved boundaries, one cannot continue to close one's eyes to the ruination of the earth, the poisoning of the seas, and the consequences of 2,000 years of unchallenged dominator culture based on monotheism, hatred of nature, suppression of the female, so forth and so on. So what shamans have to do is act as exemplars by making this cosmic journey to the domain of the Gaia ideas and then bringing them back in the form of art to the struggle to save the world.
Religion. It's a set of techniques, and the principal technique is the use of psychedelic plants.